Free, of course. The warlock did not take coin or cred for any of the merchandise he brought to the Deathlands, possibly because most of it was of no use to man or beast. Even so, the warlock gave away everything, useless or not. Reed could never figure out how the warlock existed, or even where he existed. Some had tried to discover that, but they'd never come back with a location. In fact, they'd never come back, period. And then, approximately a year after they first appeared, there suddenly seemed to be stickies everywhere. Some said the warlock had created them, but that was just foolishness. No one could create men, except God. And it was well known that God did not exist. You only had to look around you to see that. Whatever, a small army of stickies had come out of the northwest, and that was it. Most had attached themselves to Scale's troop of marauders, and Reed was dead certain that was entirely because of the warlock. There was the time Scale had ordered him to drive over 200 clicks to a tiny hamlet in the foothills of the Darks. Reed had been told to stay put, sit in the land wag for as long as it took for Scale to conduct his business, ostensibly a visit to a high-class cat house, the Ville boasted. But 200 clicks for a screw? Hell, Scale must have thought his brains were addled. Reed had never discovered the real reason for that somewhat clandestine visit, but shortly thereafter the stickies had appeared, and you didn't have to be a genius to connect the two events. So the warlock was sure as hell behind the stickies, and now this particular bunch of stickies was no more, were just lumps of fried meat, and the warlock, if Scale was correct in his assumptions, was going to be oh so pissed.
I got a bad feeling about this, Scale.
The trader's buggies were converted panel trucks, drastically converted. The lead buggy seemed to bristle with weaponry. There was an MG slit for the front passenger seat, another MG rear-mounted in the roof. Two stubby barrels jutting out of the front looked like cannons. Poking out the enclosed rear was what seemed at a distance suspiciously like a mortar barrel, and running along the driver's side, underneath the door, was a long tube. Reed watched gloomily as the buggy hurtled along the narrow space between trucks and roadside, its front machine gun sputtering flame. Rounds flayed a bunch of semi-fried stickies trying to regroup beside the huge bulk of the war wag in the center of the convoy. The buggy cleared a path, jolting on its shocks as it careered along the rutted road, its bulk smashing into dazed survivors, hurling them to one side. The three buggies raced and weaved around the parked trucks as a murky Deathlands dawn crept up from the east, sharpening the picture, turning the shadows of tall rocks into pointing, accusatory fingers. Men were now disgorging from the trucks, heavily armed and grim-visaged. Pockets of resistance were being mopped up swiftly and professionally, and Reed knew that time was running out, that any moment now, the traitor's death-dealing squads, angry and vengeful, would be opening up the tunnel under the road, scouring the rocks for snipers.
They're gonna find the tunnels, and that's gonna lead them up here! Scale, we gotta blow!
Parked in the cave behind the two muties was a jeep and two small trucks, and what remained of Scale's force, tense and nervous, knowing that everything had gone disastrously wrong. A narrow, rocky track ran from the cave mouth, dove through the wind-sculpted boulders, paralleled the blacktop far below, before curving around to the south and slicing through the hills down toward the ugly, seared plain and their campsite, maybe 5 clicks away.
Scale!
Quit yapping! Let's go!
Scale swung around and headed for one of the trucks. A man with deep, hollow eyes and a nose that drooped to his upper lip, joining with it in a flabby mass of graying skin, seemed surprised.
You not taking your jeep, Scale?
No, you take it, Bert. You and Willie. Get out of here fast and warn the camp we're shifting. We'll hold the norms off and kill those buggy riders.
Yes, Scale. You get us some fresh norm meat, huh?
I'll get us some fresh norm meat.
Scale jammed open the passenger door of the nearest truck and climbed in. Reed jumped into the driver's seat, sweating, not looking at his leader.
Hey. Smart, Scale. That'll take the heat off us.
Scale did not bother to reply as the jeep in front started up, revved hard, roared away in a swirl of dust. Reed eased the panel truck slowly toward the cave entrance. He braked just inside the opening, then jumped out and ran to the boulder-screened edge of the track. In the distance, the jeep was already at the bottom of the short hill and was now bumping and jouncing along the track at high speed. Farther on was a bend to the right, into the hills. That was where another track from the road below joined it. Reed watched as the jeep powered along the straight to hit the bend at speed. It screeched out of sight. Reed turned his eyes to the road below, and for the first time in a long while, a gap-toothed smile creased his face. The lead buggy had clearly spotted the Jeep. It was way beyond the feeder track, but suddenly its driver threw her into reverse and stormed back along the road. Then the driver hit the brakes, and dust clouded. He geared up, yanked hard at the wheel, trod on the gas again, and the buggy, engine howling, roared up the high incline track. Reed dodged back into boulder cover as the little vehicle appeared at the top of the track and hurtled out of sight after the Jeep. Another buggy followed.
Damn, taking on one buggy's okay, but two's not so hot, Scale. There's two after them.
Reed kept his eyes on the track, but no more buggies appeared. He couldn't hear any more engine roar through the heavy chatter of MG and auto fire still ripping out below. He plodded back to the truck and hauled himself in.
Two of them instead of one.
We can hit them. Move.
Reed drove fast but warily. While on the parallel track, he kept glancing to his left, down to the road below, to see if he could catch any sign that someone down there had spotted them.
Hey! Looks like luck or some damn thing is on our side, Scale. Someone down there has let off a smoke grenade. That and all that dust and shit have got to be making it hard for them to see us.
He swung right, checked out the rearview mirror. The second truck was on their tail, but not too close. He began to feel relief seeping through him.
Whew! Maybe we got this licked after all, huh? Man, I was worried there for a minute.
Hey, you know what I was thinking about? The red-haired girl. She is going to be one sweet treat for my meat. After you're done with her, of course. I mean, you're the boss. No sloppy seconds for Scale. Man, she's going to be something. Jesus, I'm getting wood just thinking about her. I wonder why there weren't any other women on that two-wag train we knocked the crap out of yesterday. That's weird, huh? I can't figure it out. And she's young, too, and that's weird, too, because all the others were oldies. Welp, they're dead meat now and useless, huh? Oh, man, tough and stringy, takes days to boil up an oldie for soup. No good at all unless you're starving, and it's the only meat around. Hey, you know what I just thought of with you? I'm never starving. You're some smart shit, Scale. Except maybe about thinking we could take on the traitor.
Reed!
Yeah, Scale?
Shut the fuck up.
I'm shutting the fuck up, Scale.
As Reed slowed to take a bend, he felt a couple of thumps on the side of the truck, tremoring through. He glanced at the rearview mirror, saw nothing out of line on his side, then noticed the driver of the following truck had an arm poked out of his window, waving frantically.
Anything on your side, Scale? We hit something?
Scale shrugged, heaved down the window, and stuck his head out.
God damn!
He yanked his head back in again and jammed the window up.
Stickies! Two of them! Must have beat it back here, waited for us!
Shit, Scale, they're with us. Let them in.
They don't look too fucking happy.
You don't look so fucking happy either, Scale. Look, don't worry, you can talk to them. Hell, you're about the only one that can.
Talking to stickies was a tiring business. They understood words, but you had to yell at them with extreme clarity, enunciate each sentence, each word, each separate syllable. Some kind of lip-reading process, as far as Reed understood it. Once you got it into their noodles what you wish them to do, you let them get on with it. Let them create the mayhem you wanted. They were very good at creating mayhem. Scale eased down the window halfway and pushed his head out.
Hey! Hello! It's me! It's Scale! Don't try to hurt... Oh, shit!
Scale whipped his head back in again and thrust the window up.
They can't hear me over the truck engine, and they're pissed.
A suctioned hand thudded against the glass, spread out, glued itself on. A hideous face suddenly appeared, eyes in frenzy. The glass shook as the sticky jerked at it furiously, one-handed. Scale turned around to the men crouching in the rear of the bouncing truck.
Blast the fuckers off through the panels!
Nuke that idea, Scale! We get slugs zipping around in this space, we're gonna get scalped!
Do it!
The sticky at the window had disappeared. One of the men in the back pointed upwards.
There's on the roof, Scale, and we ain't all that tight up there. Got holes in it fixed over with wood paneling.
Scale grabbed for his rifle, squirmed around in his seat, and sprayed at the roof.
Ah, son of a bitch! Ow, you gotta be on your fucking mind!
Reed fought with the wheel, boot jabbing at the brake as the truck careered down the sloping track. In front, a misty panorama revealed itself. An angry sun, endeavoring to pierce the thickening chem clouds, shot scarlet light lances through the murk. A seared and dreadful landscape beckoned, stretching into the unseen, unfathomed distance, dotted with stunted trees, their foliage a sickly yellow. A short distance away, three clouds of dust choke the already turbid air. Ahead, the buggies were chasing the Jeep.
Get off my fucking roof!
Gale, you're opening the roof up! Bastards will get in through the hole!
A face appeared in the torn space, greasy-skinned, with angry eyes glaring downward.
Die, fucker!
It whipped back out of sight as Scale fired again.
Give me that rifle! You're gonna kill us all, you shit-stick!
The man in back tried to drag the weapon away from the demented Mutie leader. Scale triggered a burst at him, point blank, and Slugs chewed the man apart, punched him away in a spray of scarlet that paint-licked the walls and most of those in the immediate vicinity. They flung themselves to the floor of the truck, hands over their heads. In the front, Reed prayed and wondered what would happen if he just jammed open his door and threw himself out of this madhouse. But they were going too fast, and the faster he went and the more he swung the wheel right and left, the greater the possibility that the Stickies would not be able to batter their way in. Ahead, the dust had cleared. The speeding vehicles had hit a stony patch of ground. Now the buggies could clearly see their prey, and those in the Jeep must know that they were doomed. The lead buggy was firing. Tracers from its passenger seat MG flamed at the bouncing Jeep. Rounds hammered at the Jeep's rear. The tires exploded. The buggy hurtled past at a wide angle, raking the bucking vehicle fore and aft. A line of fire caught the Jeep's passenger, and Reed saw the man's head burst open, the driver ducking under the hail of lead. The Jeep swerved toward the nearest buggy, hit its rear, caromed away, but stayed on an even keel. It accelerated and plowed, but it could not last. The buggies were coming at the Jeep from two different directions, MG fire from both converging. Blazing fire lines met, crossing on the ancient, crudely armored Jeep. Metal struts flew away, the front tires were shredded to rubber strips, and the hood blew up and sailed high into the sky. The driver was caught by two sets of fire lines, and they tore him apart bloodily, throwing chunks of him up into the muggy air. Tracers sought the juice tank and soon found it. Fire bloomed, punching the Jeep spectacularly apart, sending it cartwheeling in all directions. The traitor's men had used nothing but machine guns for their kill. They hadn't even started on the twin cannon, mortars, and rocket tubes yet.
Holy nuke shit!
Reed wrenched the wheel, pulling the speeding bucking truck onto a sidetrack that dropped away from the track he'd been on. They entered a narrow, gloomy canyon, high-cliffed, stretching away from them, undeviating, straight as an arrow before it rose again to trees, vegetation, and less dust. Reed shot a glance at Scale, who was still twisted around in his seat, his gun pointing up at the roof. In the back huddled the others, four of them now. The fifth lay in a widening pool of gore.
The Stickies are quiet now.
Probably because they like explosions and fire and shit. The Jeep gave them a show. Bastards never give in, you know that. They're up there right now waiting their chance.
Scale didn't reply, just stared in a daze at the hole in the truck roof. Reed glanced at his rearview mirror, saw the other truck still clinging to his tail, but its dust and his own obscured the entrance to the canyon. He couldn't tell if the two buggies were coming up behind. The truck hurtled along the flat of the canyon, swooped up and out of it into a grove of trees that drooped with dirty yellow foliage. They were in a wide natural valley, a part of the mountain's foothills, and the camp was almost dead center. It was a small hamlet of old huts and cabins, clustered along one end of what had once been a huge lake, but was now only a dirty little pond of muddy, brackish, just about drinkable water. In the distant past, it had been a thriving community, a summer resort for wealthy people who came there to fish the lake and climb the mountains for fun. But of course, Reed knew only rumors of such things, was in fact puzzled by the notion that people once crawled up steep precipices as an enjoyable relaxation.
What are we gonna do, Scale?
Gonna fuck me the red hair.
Say what? Scale, we got some priorities here, right? Scale?
Huh?
What are we gonna do? Them buggies bound to find us. They're gonna cream us.
Scale's head jerked around, his thick-lipped mouth gaping, his eyes wide and crazy, the gun in his hands suddenly jammed into the side of Reed's head.
So you do what you want to do. I'm gonna get me the red-haired bitch.
The vegetation all around them was parched, but it was still alive. It seemed to be able to just survive in this hostile environment, fed perhaps by the tiny trickles of water that still infiltrated the earth from off the hills. A weather-faded signboard was fixed to the facing wall, on which the words McPartland Brothers could just be discerned, if there had been anybody there who could actually have read them. But this was a decaying ville. The art of reading had long departed it. The roofs of the cabins were holed, although that didn't matter much, since rain was no problem in this part of the Deathlands. Walls of some of the shacks sagged, unmended. Others had no walls at all. Were simply wood frames with rotting bits of blanket draped around them, or tarps, or old animal hides brought from elsewhere, when Scale had first discovered the place and moved his band in. A few human hides, too. Smoke drifted from some of the chimneys. The lake lay a few hundred meters to the north, most of it parched, just cracked mud now, the dark water far away toward the center. Across the other side, the hills rose up sheer, a frowning, gloomy mass of peaks that brooded over the valley. Sluttish women in filthy robes wandered toward the truck, most of them at some stage of pregnancy or other, although childbirth here was even less of a problem than the rain. Most of the babies were stillborn. Those that survived were usually sickly and weak, with a variety of ugly ailments, and often limbs where no limbs were supposed to be. There were some healthier-looking children, but these, without exception, were what remained from various landwag trains once the adults had been massacred. Scale saved the females, if they were young and looked strong, kept them as a kind of harem until he grew tired of them, when he tossed them to the men. And if the women thought they got it bad from Scale, they got it 100 times worse from the men. Reed brought the truck to a halt and shivered. Most of those 100 men were dead now, those in the 2 trucks, probably all that were left. Maybe 12 men, unless there were a few stragglers in the tunnel still, or hiding out in the rocks above the highway.
The sticky Scale? What are we gonna do?
Out!
Scale! Quit pointing that rifle at me!
Out!
Scale, I'm your wheelman! They're gonna kill me, they're gonna suck me apart!
I'll get me another wheelman! Out!
All right. But shit, Scale, you ain't right no more!
Reed hit the ground, somersaulted, was up on his 2 legs and running, charging through a group of women who were staring at the truck with lackluster eyes.
Where'd they go? They hop off as we were going through the trees? Oh, shit. That means they're around. They're still around.
The stickies were no longer on the truck's roof, nor clinging to the sides, nor as far as he could see underneath either.
Huh. Maybe they just beat it. They just got disgusted with the whole thing and cleared out. Crap, what am I saying? No way, my friend. Sticky's got 1-track minds. And where the hell are Trader's buggies? Scale, where'd the buggies go? No sign of them, no sound of them. Hey, Scale! I bet they gave up the chase after they got the Jeep. I bet they just went back and... Oh, who am I kidding? Trader's guys are like them stickies. They got 1-track minds, too. I think I still got a bad feeling about this.
Ryan's nose wrinkled. The stench from the camp below was like a fist between the eyes. Months, maybe years, of rot contributed to that smell. Bad food, excrement, urine, dead bodies flung anywhere to decay. A stomach-churning stink, a monstrous miasma. Distilled and bottled, it would probably be as efficient in destruction as strong poison. Not that those who existed down there would notice anything. They were used to it by now, and worse. Ryan was crouched on a low, bush-topped bluff that overlooked the pest hole of a camp from the south. He had spotted the 2 trucks while dealing with the Jeep, but then held back from following them too closely. It was easy enough to watch where they had gone, even more simple to follow at a distance and hide the 2 buggies in the trees that grew this side of the canyon. He was joined now by Abe, a tall, lanky individual with a thick mustache and long, flowing hair tied up in a knot at the back of his head.
Whew! Hell, Ryan, we're gonna need masks to go down there.
Yeah, pretty ripe.
Ripe ain't the word.
Don't worry, Abe. A couple of mortars should do it. We don't need to go in blazing.
Ryan pointed down at the cluster of buildings, to one building in particular, larger than the rest, and built away from the center.
See that one? Seems to be in better shape than the others, and it's bigger. Old storehouse, probably. That'll be where the honcho hangs out. And that'll be where the weaponry and fuel will be stored, and the explosives. The honcho would want to keep an eye on all that valuable shit. Hit that, and we solve the problem.
What about all those people? We let them live?
They aren't going to be zipping around attacking landwag trains now. They'll be lucky to survive out the year. Winter comes, no food.
Abe nodded. He knew Ryan's rules. The traitor's rules, really. No killing for the sake of it. No killing unless you or your buddies were in danger. Or unless other innocent folk were in danger.
We can back one of the buggies up here fast, before they catch on to the noise, and just take out that storehouse. If I'm wrong, she won't go up like a firework display, and we'll maybe have to think again, because they must have materiel somewhere, and that's what we have to destroy. But I don't think I'm wrong.
Could use a rocket.
Waste of a rocket. We got plenty of mortar shells.
Okay.
Fire blast. Wait a minute. Give me the glasses. Abe handed over his binoculars, saw what Ryan had spotted. Ryan saw the scene below spring into high mag definition through his one remaining eye. The man with a faintly scaly skin, whom he'd already tagged as the leader, was emerging from one of the cabins, dragging a woman. But this was not by any stretch of the imagination one of the Mutie women. This one was dressed in a clean, pouched combat suit with good boots. She was long-limbed, full-breasted, with a high-boned face. Her most startling feature was her hair. Rich, deep magenta in hue, a thick mass of it, flowing over her shoulders and halfway down her back. The Mutie leader was dragging her by it, two fists deep in its chunky mass, pulling her along the ground. Her hands were tied behind her, and her legs were hobbled at the ankles. Even so, she was putting up a struggle, jerking and squirming as she was tugged toward the large storehouse. Ryan put the glasses down, shot a bleak look at his companion. Christy Roth winced her eyes closed and pushed her face deep into the filthy blanket on which she was huddled. All of her body ached, her arms most of all because they were wrenched behind her, tied tightly at the wrists. Her head felt as though someone with abnormally calloused hands had reached inside her skull and was clutching at her brain, squeezing it tight, then letting it go. Repeatedly squeezing and letting go. Waves of pain washed over her and receded, then surged and fell away again. Her breasts hurt, her nipples hurt, her ribs and kidneys throbbed where the man with the faintly scaled skin had kicked her viciously, not once but three times, in swift succession. At the moment, she was trying desperately not to be sick, because in her present position, if she were sick, she had no means of avoiding her own vomit. The sickness slowly receded, leaving her with sweat dewing her skin, her brow clammily cold. She fluttered open her eyes, eased her head sideways, her left cheek away from the verminous blanket. She closed her eyes again, breathing out slowly and silently, as another subtly different ache spread through the pit of her stomach, a soft sharpness that was at the same time a feeling incorporeal, a shift in the mind as much as in the body. She winced again as she felt her blood flowing gently out of her. Of course, she knew almost to the minute when she was due, had always known since menarche. Now, so near the onrushing moment of terror, of violation, her body had shown her that, blind to all externalities, the secret rhythm of life continued its perpetual motion, undisturbed. Now into her mind, there flashed again that sickening scene after the ambush, when the two burning land wags had lain drunkenly at the side of the pitted highway, and the mutants had been at their bloody work, slaughtering and raping the two old ladies from Harmony, dear Uncle Tyus, Peter Maritza, and the rest of the passengers. Then the ultimate degradation, the hacking off of the heads, the shoving and kicking and the heaving of the twisted torsos into a tangled heap at the side of the road, fodder for the birds and strange beasts, or perhaps worse, any human scavengers that might happen by. That she had been spared offered no comfort. She knew precisely why she had not been subjected to physical abuse and assault. She saw again in her mind the mad eyes of the man the others called Scale, as he stared at her in hideous appreciation, literally licking his lips, one hand slowly and obscenely rubbing his crotch. She had surrendered to an engulfing wave of blind panic that threatened her sanity. Yet even then, she'd still had the psychic strength to pull herself away from the black abyss, on the edge of which for a microsecond she teetered. The mental discipline that had been her mother's strongest bequest came to her aid just when she most needed it. She had divided off her terror and revulsion, forced an almost alien calm to take their place. Strive for life, her mother had dinned into her at an age when she had not even known what the words meant. And Sonia Roth had never stopped repeating that blessed motto. It had become part of Christy's psyche, as it was now. Uncle Tyus, old Peter, and the rest of them were dead. The fantastic dream they had been pursuing
had died with them. Calm. She must become calm, must strive for a measure of tranquility. Only when she was calm, even if only for a few seconds, was she fully in command, mistress of herself, of her body, most important of all, of her mind. Christy felt her blood weeping out of her, felt the warm flow of it between her legs, and this heartened her. It signified an untapped energy of vast potency. Slowly, warily, she swiveled her head to peer across the huge room. There was a table nearby, littered with candle stubs and loose rounds of ammunition. There were a few broken-backed chairs. Opposite her was a grimy window through which nothing could be seen, then a wide plank door, now closed, then another window, as filthy as the first. The ceiling was high, high above her. It was dark up there. Arranged around the walls, jammed down over angled hooks, was a grisly assortment of heads, male and female. Hundreds of them, young and old, some fairly fresh, others in the final stages of decay. Sightless eyes gazed vacantly upward at nothing. The heads of those slaughtered yesterday had not yet been trophied. Christy did not know where they had been stored, and did not want to know. The rest of the storehouse had been divided at some time into two separate stories, but some of the floor of the upper chamber had long since rotted away. The partition, too, that had once separated the main two-level store from the living area had disappeared. Only a few planks here and there showed that a wall had ever existed. On the lower level, the ground floor section, she could see Scale's armory and store. Guns were everywhere, some in piles, some stacked against the outer wall. Machine guns, rifles, shotguns. A crate of grenades, open, its top wrenched off, stood near the door. She knew very well how to use a grenade. She knew very well how to handle an automatic rifle, too. In this, as in so much else, Uncle Tyus had been more than thorough when he took her in after her mother's death. From where she lay, Christy could not see the very farthest part of the building. That was where the man called Scale was.
Where is that goddamn thing?
But she could hear him muttering to himself as he kicked things over, wrenched at cardboard boxes, seeking something. She wondered how much time she had. She tried to relax, forced herself to relax. Under the circumstances, not easy. But she had to become like the invisible clock in her body, blind to everything but herself. She closed her eyes and drifted. She felt as though she was on the edge of... what? Difficult to say. She tried to imagine a huge, soft mattress of the kind owned by wealthy folk in the East, one of the symbols of their status. Very thick and very, very soft. And she was lying atop it. What she must do was sink into it. But at the moment it was nothing but unyielding, as firm and obdurate as a tabletop. Or maybe not quite as hard as that. Not quite. She could feel a yielding. She blocked off all noise, all outside sounds, everything that was not a part of her. And in her mind, she smiled and began to sink into the feathery cotton-wool softness. And as she began to sink, so she could feel within her a stirring.
Oh, Jesus Christ, you can't find it anywhere. There it is! Who the hell put it back here? Nice.
Scale marched back down the long room, smacked the coiled bullwhip against the side of his leg. The feel of it was reassuring, as though it was a trade-off for the power he had so swiftly, so devastatingly lost less than an hour ago. He would do her now, do everything to her he could think of. Then, having assuaged the raging fire in his loins, he would flay her, destroy her with the whip. Then he would leave. That was it. He strode out from under the sagging beams that supported rotting planks and headed for the bed.
Showtime.
He threw the whip down on the trash-strewn floor and grabbed at the shape, his hands fumbling, then yanking the loose clothing, ripping it, tearing off long strips of it, clenching fingers at her panties and pulling. He reached for the knife at his belt, sliced the cords that bound her ankles, and wrenched her legs apart. For Christy, it was as though someone had thrust a spear deep into her soul. Such agony. The psychic shock exploded through her, jolting every nerve end in her body. She came alive. Her eyes burst open. She saw Scale looming over her, staring down at her, his mouth wide.